couple things in particular. As you notice here, the actual topic is maximizing executive function. And we're talking about executives, all of us involved in entrepreneurial work, but also the executive function, which is the way the brain works, cognition in general. How do we maximize executive function? I had a new patient just last week who I Skyped with in a consultation. She was all alone in her room. She didn't want any of her family to know that we were talking. And she shared with me that she had 10 years before lost her business that she had started on her own. It was a very successful home care business, a healthcare business, that she lost because she had lost her executive function. She had lost her ability to do what she was best at, and that is make decisions and remember what she needed to do next to be effective in communicating with clients. And she essentially lost that, and within a period of several years, because of her steady decline of cognitive function, she lost her entire business. But see, it was during that talk that I realized that the most important job for me during that 1 hour long Skype phone conference was to help her get a sense that there was hope, to give her a sense that something could change. Because I knew unless she was hopeful that change could occur, she would never bring anybody else into that discussion. She was afraid of bringing her sister in, a friend, a colleague, a neighbor. And I know, as somebody who's worked with hundreds and hundreds of patients who have had significant cognitive decline, unless they have a health partner that can work with them through, especially during the first 3 to 6 months, until their executive function is improved so much that they can be successful more on their own, unless they have a health partner, they're not going to succeed. So family becomes very integral in whether or not we're going to achieve success, especially when we're dealing with the number one health concern, not only in America, but in the world, which is diminishing cognitive reserve. That's the number. You know that in Europe, the number one cause of premature death? Alzheimer's. Number one, beating cancer and heart disease. I believe it's number one in the U.S. We just don't have as good a statistics as the Europeans do. Okay, for various reasons. But in the United States, it's actually the number three cause of premature death. But that's just the beginning. That's not even the most important problem. The real issue is that it is the number one cause of lost years of living. While you're still alive, you dramatically decrease your ability to function, and that can last for 10 to 20 years. But nobody's talking about it, especially within families, unless they're confiding with a close friend on what they're seeing in their own families. But more and more people are going to be talking about it because there's actually great potential to reverse cognitive decline in many respects, but only if the conditions are met. Only if we do what is necessary to appropriately address the underlying triggers, the underlying causes of cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease. Well, I also appreciate the fact, Sebastian, that you talked about what constitutes opportunity. Anybody who's in business for more than even a few years or even a few months knows that failure, or what is considered by the world as failure, is oftentimes one of the best things that can happen to us because it generates opportunities that would otherwise never have happened. It generates opportunities that otherwise would leave us in a state of constant mediocrity. I will say that the two best things that happened to me as a professional was losing my job. Both times, it catapulted me to a much higher level than I would otherwise been. The first time was I was on the full-time faculty right here at the School of Public Health at Loma Linda University. I lost my job after just a year and a half of being an instructor and professor there, along with a whole bunch of my colleagues because of reorganization, politics, etc. And at first, I was very bitter. How could this happen to me? You know, I spent all this time and effort, and I was developing all these great programs, and it was just stripped away from me. But looking back at it, even after about a year, I realized that that was the best thing that could have happened to me. I've been on the clinical faculty now for the Loma Linda University School of Medicine, School of Public Health, since I left, for the past 30 years almost. And I found that I'm much more valuable to the university when I'm not being paid by the university, when I'm generating my own revenues, and I can do what I believe to be best. I don't have to worry about the politics of an institution. So entrepreneurship is a wonderful thing that God wants more and more of us to be involved with. The second time was when I had spent 14 years with my wife, Betsy, and my family in Guam as a medical missionary. Had a wonderful experience there. Learned a lot. And then I was recruited to come back to Southern California. I persistently said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to come back to Southern California. Why would I want to leave Guam anyways? Why would I want to leave the paradise of Guam? And but when I started praying about it, after a colleague of mine said, Wes, are you actually praying about this? I go, like, do I really need to pray? I knew God made sure that I went to Guam. So should I actually be praying whether God wants me to leave Guam? Of course, the answer is always yes. You always pray about every opportunity or situation that comes up. So we ended up coming back to Southern California, working for a large family practice medical group in Temecula, just an hour south of Loma Linda, hour north of San Diego. And things went great for 3 years. At the end of the 3 years of my contract, I thought, well, I got to negotiate a better contract here. I'm bringing in over $400,000 a year to this group. And as I went into the negotiation, they said, hey, you know, we want to thank you for your service over the last 3 years, but we've decided not to retain your services. I was shocked. That was the best thing that ever happened to me professionally, because it forced me to pray and ask God for what is the next step. I knew God had brought me back because I didn't want to come back. It was God had created multiple experiences, those Gideon experiences, those fleece experiences, to make it clear to me 100% that he wanted me to take that job. Okay, but God wanted me to take that job not because he wanted me to stay there until I retired, but because it was the next step in something God was planning for me beyond that. And that's what allowed me it forced me to become an entrepreneur. It forced me to get into my own private practice, where now I can go anywhere I want in the world without getting, you know, filling out forms in triplicate and waiting 3 months to get approved or not. And I can set my own pace of what I need to do. And instead of being forced to see 20 patients a day, I see 6 patients a day, hour every time. Wow. Because that's what's necessary, especially if we're going to be successful in reversing cognitive decline in a patient. Critical. So Don't despair if you are trying to start up a new company and you're struggling along the way, because those are opportunities for you to grow in a powerful, powerful way. Just recently, Peter Versio, a young man who actually grew up in Guam, his parents were medical missionaries, lived right across the street from our family, And he is now involved in a startup company. He said, Uncle Wes, he calls me Uncle Wes. He says, I need you to help us with this program. Would you mind being one of our medical advisors? And I said, certainly. This is called Sirona Life. We build profitable farms that grow fresh, healthy, and local food in any climate. They essentially have designed these pods where they can grow this. It's a hydroponic system where they can develop jobs for our Adventist academies, colleges, and hospitals and clinics all around the country. It's a wonderful opportunity. Here's their mission statement. At Sirona Life, we believe that everyone should have access to healthy, local-grown food in a way that is most profitable and sustainable. We empower local communities to participate in the food systems in a way that brings jobs, money, and access to healthy food for everyone. Our partnerships with schools, hospitals, Upper Columbia Academy already has a working system. Loma Linda University is working with them to establish the same things to provide these type of foods to patients and other organizations in your locality, allowing us to build a model that fits the need of your area rather than a one-size-fits-all approach. So it's wonderful being able to work with entrepreneurs who see an opportunity that dramatically enhances the health of not just a few people, but everyone who is willing to listen and to participate. Why do we care? Why do we care whenever I do presentations, regardless of the worldview of that organization? I always say because the Apostle John once wrote 2,000 years ago, "Beloved, I wish above all things that you would prosper and be in good health, even as your soul prosper." So recently I was asked to do a series of meetings up north, and we were talking about giving people hope. People who have out of control diabetes, people who have Alzheimer's or who have mild cognitive impairment and have been told by their doctors, "I'm so sorry." In fact, just a few days ago, Actually, on Thursday, I was Skyping with a physician who works with the VA system, and he's a geriatrician, meaning he works primarily with elderly individuals, and so most of what he does is diagnosing Alzheimer's. He's an expert in diagnosing Alzheimer's, and he had actually was consulting with me. We've met at various medical conferences, and he knows what I'm doing, and so he was just consulting with me so that I can be his health partner to help guide him through some of his health issues that he has. And he said to me, he says, "You know, Wes, he teaches at one of the big universities in this country and medical schools. And he says, what I train my residents, the three most important words that you need to learn to say to your patients and saying it in a way that means something that's empathetic is, I'm so sorry." Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? In other words, if that's the last message that a patient hears or a client hears from you, they're basically hearing from you, you have nothing for them. You have no answers. And the reality that we have been given a health message that has significant answers for most individuals. We have opportunities to impact people in ways that we haven't even conceived of yet, mostly because of our lack of faith. I personally recognize from time to time my lack of faith when it takes somebody outside of Seventh-day Adventism, it takes somebody outside of Christianity to do a study or to present a concept that makes me feel somewhat ashamed because I think I should have known that all along. We have this in our message. I just simply didn't have the faith that this concept, that this construct could be applied in an effective way to people who had cognitive decline, to people who had significant cognitive impairment. I just assumed that was just too late. And that's just simply wrong. And you know what's exciting to me is that God had been preparing me for this for decades in the field of addressing diabetes reversal and dealing with all the politics for decades when I gave talks on diabetes reversal, being rebuffed and being told that this was absolutely no evidence that diabetes could be reversed. Of course, I'm saying, well, just talk to a couple hundred of my patients. You know, I mean, what evidence do you need? And now, of course, we have research upon research documenting that diabetes is reversible. But now we're struggling with the concepts politically and within medicine of whether or not cognitive impairment is in different aspects of it are reversible. And that's the new political challenge right now. And yet we're seeing the power of reversal. And so I'm going to be sharing with you some of this text that is so powerful because God wants to give us hope. God wants you and I to share that hope with everybody that we're in contact with. As we, whether we're involved in nutrition or in fitness or in any aspect of healthcare, we have an opportunity to give people hope. So, wonderful, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Now, for those of you who know your Bible, you know that there's conditions that come with this statement. This isn't all, hey, you know, just pray and God is going to heal you. God is sharing us with us guidelines that set the physiologic, the spiritual basis for healing. We need to understand what those guidelines are, and if we're willing to follow those guidelines, we should have hope. Our job is to let people know that there is hope based on that. Okay, so one of my favorite books growing up, when I was 15 years old, my father encouraged me to read the book Ministry of Healing. It changed my life. It gave me hope. It gave me an awareness that health and healing is possible for nearly everyone who is willing to work at it and figure out what the underlying issues are for them. One of the statements which puzzled me as a young man, but now makes perfect sense to me after 30 years of experience with clinical lifestyle medicine, is a quote from the Ministry of Healing that says, "The only hope of better things, the only hope, okay, for better things is in the education of the people in right principles, guidelines, actionable items." Not just feel-good stuff, but actionable items. Let physicians teach the people that restorative power is not in drugs, but in nature. Okay, disease, and this is key. Disease is an effort of nature to free the system from conditions that result from a violation of the laws of health. Now, when I first read that, it just thought, well, that's interesting. But you need to understand, this is a revolutionary statement even now. Okay, this is not being taught in medical school. Okay, what do you mean? Disease is an effort of nature to free the system of conditions? In other words, stop treating the symptoms, because if you do that, there is no hope. Now, sometimes we have to treat symptoms, but we can't stop there, because treating the symptoms does not address the actual cause of the problem. There is no hope when we don't address the multiple actual causes of the problem. So, Ellen White goes on to say that in case of sickness, the cause should be ascertained. Causes, really implied here, the causes should be ascertained. Unhelpful conditions should be changed. Wrong habits corrected. Then, nature is to be assisted in her effort to expel impurities and to reestablish right conditions in the system. So let's just... I mentioned to you that I had this experience maybe 5 years ago where I read this, 2014, read this study in the journal Aging by Dr. Del Bredesen, who at the time was at UCLA Department of Neurology, Center for Alzheimer's Research. And he was talking about reversal of cognitive decline, a novel therapeutic program. And this is one of those aha things where I'd been studying health all along and I'd been learning how to reverse this diabetes. And then I realized from studying this and expanding my understanding of cognitive decline that the main driver of loss of brain function, the main driver that leads to Alzheimer's, is insulin resistance. So that's why I was so grateful that God led me to work with Life and Health Network and Danny Kwan and developing the Diabetes Undone program, because that is the very first step anybody should follow if they want to address their risk of cognitive decline or help them reverse cognitive decline that they've already been experiencing. That is the first step. Why? Because Alzheimer's is essentially, and we've known this now for over 25 years, insulin resistance of the brain. It's also being referred to as type 3 diabetes. So that's the first step. It's not the only step, but it's the most common driver, because almost everybody that you know has insulin resistance. Almost everybody. And I can do tests to document that in every single case. Very, very few people, only the healthiest 5-10% of the population, don't have insulin resistance. Okay, and this goes way beyond whether you're at optimal weight or whether you work out. This has to do with many other factors and can only really be assessed by appropriate testing. So it was in 2014 that God brought Dr. Dale Bredesen into my life. As far as I know, he's not a Christian. He certainly believes in evolution, but he's an amazing researcher who is gracious and humble and eager to teach everything that he's learned over the last 45 years in his work. When Dr. Harvey Kellogg was asked, "Man, how do you keep up? You know, how do you keep up, and how do you stay 10 plus years ahead of the rest of your colleagues?" And he says, simple. He says, whenever a new program and a new idea, a new therapy comes out, I evaluate it based on the construct of the Seventh-day Adventist health message. If it fits within that contrast, if there's no incongruities, I accept the aspects of that make sense, and I adapt the aspects of it that don't make sense, that aren't consistent with our health message. That's why Dr. Kellogg, for so many years of his professional life, was way above. He was the head, not the tail. He was the head. So that's what we need to be doing, is taking advantage of these concepts that give us greater understanding and faith in things we've known all along. We just need to apply them in a more robust and more appropriate and manageable way. Let me just go through this real quick, because otherwise I'll never get done with this talk. and these are statements coming out of Dr. Bredesen's research. In Alzheimer's treatment, there's not a single drug that gives anything beyond a marginal and sustained symptomatic effect with little nor effect on disease progression. In order to get effective improvements in Alzheimer's, we must address the underlying causes of the disease. Sound familiar? Oh, did he get this from Ellen White? Probably not, but he got it from the same God, right, that taught him how to use his intellect and apply it properly. And focus on the combination strategies, not one. Okay, nutrition might be the most important factor, but it ain't the only one. Right, Sebastian? Okay, it can't be the only one. We become champions of one thing, and we call that our wellness program. We have to be champions of balance. The Ministry of Healing doesn't just talk about nutrition. It talks about many things. It talks about many things that we need to be champions of, and in a balanced fashion, help people understand how they play a role in healing of disease. It requires a comprehensive, network-based, synergistic approach. It will be necessary to target multiple pathways simultaneously. Don't try this. Oh, I tried nutrition for a while. That didn't work. Now I'm going to try exercise. Man, that didn't work either. Now I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. You got to do it all together. Okay? You can take baby steps, but you got to bring it all together or else it's not going to work. Okay? These must be done simultaneously in order to affect an improvement in symptoms and pathophysiology. The goal is not simply to normalize metabolic function, but rather to optimize this. I one of the main things that I do with my patients is teaching them not to accept normal blood values or normal statistics for their health. Because normals just simply means you're like everybody else who gets cancer, who gets heart disease, who gets strokes, who get Alzheimer's. So normalcy will get you sick. So do not accept normals, only accept optimals, or at least strive to achieve optimals. This is critical, critical for us to be successful. Just as in other chronic diseases, the goal is to reach a threshold effect, that tipping point, such that once enough of the underlying causal network components have been impacted, the pathological process would be halted or even potentially reversed. I mean, this could be a chapter out of Mind Cure or, you know, another part of the ministry of healing, right? And yet he gets criticized all the time for his approach. Just like Dr. Dean Ornish, 25 years ago, was criticized for his major research showing that coronary artery disease was reversible. And there's still some cardiologists out there saying it's not reversible. Because if they don't promote the underlying triggers, addressing the underlying triggers, of course it's not reversible. Okay, so we need to, when we're dealing with a problem that's so complex as Alzheimer's, this is a slide of Dr. Bredesen's, we need to recognize that we're dealing with a building that has 36 holes in the roof. Fixing just one, two, or three of them ain't gonna do a lot of good. Okay, every hole we fix is important, is necessary, is just not sufficient. One of the main principles I learned in cancer and cardiovascular epidemiology, right here, just right up the hill from where we're meeting today, in Loma Linda, okay, the old sanitarium. That's where I went to school over 30 years ago. and the main principles is that in order for something to work, it has to be necessary, but it actually must meet sufficient breadth of treatment, or else it's not going to work. Okay, so let's do a quick case study here. Like so many people, Dan, a 67-year-old television network executive from the LA area, knew his cognitive function was declining. 10 years earlier, he had become aware that name recognition was compromised and that he required reliance on note-taking and looking up information that he normally was able to remember. I'm going to read this because otherwise I'll take too long. It's a great story. At the first consultation I had with him, he actually drove down from L.A., he told me about a trip that he had taken overseas, a business trip, with his based on his television work. And he had indulged in a large steak, after which he experienced a significant cognitive decompensation. He experienced a strange decompensation of his mental abilities. This, of course, was great evidence that his amazing cognitive reserve that he actually had a photographic memory. And for him to experience a cognitive decompensation was very scary to him. He had had this form of eidetic memory, allowing him to recall details from board meetings. You know, he was the top executive in this network. And so he'd go to board meetings, and he could recite word for word decisions that had been made over 10 years before at previous board meetings. And he was the go-to guy. If there was ever a discussion about what happened in the past, they'd finally come back to Dan and say, okay, what actually went down, Dan? What is the truth? And he would explain to everybody's satisfaction what the truth really was. But this was failing him now, and he was very concerned about what that meant. You see, his mother had died at age 93. Wow, what's wrong with that? I mean, that's a great life, isn't it? It's not a great life if she spent the last 20 years in cognitive decline in the last 10 years from full-blown Alzheimer's. And so he had secretly harbored this concern and this stress in his life for a long time. When confiding this concern about his failing memory to a colleague, his colleague said to him, says, "What, are you kidding me? You're the smartest person in this whole corporation." And to me, in an embarrassing way, he said, "You know, I wouldn't admit this to anybody else, but, you know, I'm here seeking your help." He says, "They're right. I am the smartest guy in the corporation. But I am not what I used to be. And I'm wondering if I'm following the path that my mother had followed." Well, we did comprehensive testing on him. I mean, this is real comprehensive. This is not your Sunday morning blood draw for cholesterol and blood sugars and a TSH level. This is two or three vials. We're talking about 30 plus vials of blood. This is very comprehensive. The more we know about your risk factors, the better you are able to reverse whatever problem you have. Never seek to avoid learning about another health problem that you have, because in fact, the more health problems that you know you have, the better able you are to actually reverse those conditions, because we have more physiologic understanding of how this pattern comes together and what you specifically need to do that might be different from your other friends and family members that can help you reverse your condition. So he followed this program, and it's comprehensive. He had only been sleeping 3-4 hours a night. If you want to destroy your wonderful cognitive abilities, just be a hard worker, just be a good adventist and work and sleep only 3 or 4 or 5 hours a night. That's guaranteed to increase insulin resistance, which is guaranteed to increase buildup of beta amyloid plaques in your brain, which is guaranteed to increase your risk of developing diabetes type 2 and diabetes type 3, insulin resistance of the brain, Alzheimer's. As I started talking with Dan about the approach, the justification for the approach, I shared with him some of these concepts from the Ministry of Healing, to which he was very interested. This definition of disease as an effort of the body to rid itself of the underlying causes of disease. Do you know that beta amyloid, that has been maligned and vilified in research for decades now, and the latest huge multi-million dollar trial to remove beta amyloid with antibodies has failed just a few months ago? Essentially, every single drug trial done, over 200 of them, on Alzheimer's has failed. A good reason for that is because it's monotherapy. They're trying to do one thing. They're trying to fix one of those 36 holes in that roof and wondering why their research continues to fail. And so the what's interesting is that the beta amyloid plaque that is widely recognized as the cause of Alzheimer's is actually produced by the glial cells of the brain in an effort to rid the body of disease, in an effort to rid the brain, the most important and complex structure that we know in the universe, humanly speaking. In other words, efforts to prevent the brain from doing what it knows it needs to do to address the disease process and the inflammation process is always going to fail. Unless, did you catch what I said? Let me go back to that. Did you catch what I said? I should have commented on it. Each network risk. Well, I didn't even read this. I skipped it. The approach is personalized based on 150 data points, including lab scans, cognitive tests, and history. The protocol has continued optimization over time. Each network risk factor is addressed in the most rational, pathologic, physiologic way, and as far upstream as possible. I'm an upstreamist. It's an optimist that goes to the extreme. Why? Because sometimes we need to do that. Extreme based on world standards, but we get extreme benefits and we accomplish things that are still considered to be unattainable in medicine because we're doing what it takes. Okay, so let's jump forward here. Dan started changing the schedule to focus on the one thing. Okay, or the most important things that he needed to do if he was going to be successful, right? He made it clear to his staff that he wasn't going to be staying, that he was not available at 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning if there was some big issue. He says, that can be handled by somebody else. I am not going to be addressing putting out fires at 2 o'clock in the morning, okay? I'm going to be sleeping, and then I'm going to be more effective to you when I do come in. So he started managing his time in a very effective manner. He started exercising every day, something that he had convinced himself he didn't have time for because of his, you know, the urgency of the moment, the tyranny of the urgent, right? And so he started now planning it as part. He just crossed out time. If somebody needed a meeting with him, he said, you come walk with me. Because I'm walking right now. If it's that important, you're going to be walking with me for the next half hour. So many of his colleagues got healthier as a result of his commitment to exercise. He went on a 100% plant-based diet, started dramatically improving his blood sugars. Bottom line, after 6 months, Dan, at his six-month appointment with me, reported that his ability to recall facts had greatly improved and stated, and I quote, while a recent board meeting I was able to effectively and vividly recall information from a project completed 12 years ago, something that he had not been able to do now for almost the last 10 years. When we commit ourselves to the guidelines, to the principles that are available to us today, that are all solidly in the medical literature and certainly within our health message, we can see tremendous, tremendous opportunity. So, bottom line is the real issue is how much life we have in our years. I'm starting to be less and less concerned about how many years we have to live. Because, you know, for so many people, I remember in Guam, this is about 20 years ago, a patient saw me and she was 62 years old. You know, it's just a couple years away from me, right? So she said, Doc, I don't want to live past 63. And I go like, that's just a year away. And she says, yeah. And so I asked her, why? He says, you know, Doc, just about all my relatives come from a big extended family. Once they hit 62, 63, they start becoming a huge burden to the family. Their health has fallen so greatly that they're just not enjoying life anymore. And says, I don't want to live that way. I don't want to be a burden to my family. I do not want to live a dysfunctional life for 10, 15 years. And so I said to her, I said, Mary, says, what if at 63 you actually feel like you're at 42? And that was a concept that had never occurred to her. And she said to me, you mean that's possible? I said, absolutely. Absolutely that's possible, but only if we address the reasons you're feeling this way right now. Only if we address all those reasons that your aunts and uncles and your parents develop those problems. If you're willing to work with me, there's great opportunity here. Okay. This is a love story, John and Nancy. Real quick, about 4 years ago, I was doing a diabetes reversal workshop for a hospital out east. And after the workshop, this was mainly for doctors and dietitians and others, but after the workshop, this man came up to me and says, you know, my wife, she's diabetic. Can you help us? And so we talked a little bit, and he sought to try to introduce some of the strategies. But right around that time, she had been diagnosed with full-blown Alzheimer's. And that just demoralized him and his wife, and because they'd been given those three deadly words by their doctor. I'm so sorry. There's really nothing that we can do. It says, we can start you on Aricept. Says, but just want you to know that Aricept doesn't change the course of the disease at all. We know that. It might help you feel a little bit better temporarily. She started it, and she actually would have hallucinations from it and agitation, so she couldn't even take that. And so for the next 4 years, she would go through major sundowning syndrome. Every early or late afternoon, about 4 o'clock, she would start getting confused and agitated and would want to go pack her bags and move back to be with mother, who had been dead for over 20 years. She would be seeing things and hallucinating and literally would be trying to get out the door with her suitcases. And her husband had to basically manage this for 3 to 4 hours every night. This went on for 3.5 years. And then the next morning, he'd have to unpack all the suitcases and organize the room and take a deep breath. And can you imagine the challenge of being a spouse and dealing with that, being a caregiver? About 8 months ago, I got a call. My clinic got a call from John and said, you know what? I read a study that was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. It was a review of a study. They had 100 case studies of people that were reversing cognitive decline. I had the privilege to be one of the co-authors on that study with Dr. Bredesen. And he says, I wonder if you could help my wife. And so I could tell that he was committed. That he was engaged. His wife had full-blown Alzheimer's. She scored 0 out of 30. On her cognitive assessment test, 0. She was all the way advanced. She was basically a vegetable. She would lay in her room with the TV on all day, sleep most of the time, not engage even with what's going on TV, not laugh at anything, not talk. She would try to talk to her husband or somebody in the family, and she'd just jibber-jabber. There was no communication, no real living going on at all. And yet her husband would not give up on her. Really a love story. And so he said, I will do anything to help my wife regain even some of her cognitive abilities back, because I don't have my wife anymore. She's gone. She is lost in a shell of herself. And in brief, what happened was that he started incorporating the entire protocol. Totally changed. This is a lady who would always be asking for ice cream and candies and of course, right? So at that state of cognitive decline, you're basically not even as intelligent as a toddler. But you know what you want. And so she was, in the best way she could, she would ask for, you know, people know what people like, you know. And so family would just give her whatever she wanted, right? Let's just be kind to her. Give her all the ice cream and Snicker bars, whatever she wants. And so that was the first principle. We went 100% plant-based, where as a husband, he made sure that she got 3 meals a day that were loading her full of nutrients, these nutrients were causing epigenetic changes in her health such that the unhealthy genes were being turned off. And the healthy genes, the health-promoting genes, were being turned on, and she was getting healing from the genetic, epigenetic perspective in a dramatic way. She started responding. Within a month, she was no longer having her sundowning syndrome. Now, I did not expect that. I didn't have enough faith, I guess. Okay? But because it, and it wasn't because of what she did, it was because of what her husband was doing for her. It's because of his love for her that she was dramatically improving. We did everything. He would, as soon as she started becoming more mobile, she could actually hold on to a grocery cart. And they would go, he would take her to the grocery store and walk with her for 30 minutes every day, going around the grocery store. She would grab candies and donuts, and then he would take them and put them back. So he got his exercise, and she got her exercise, but they only bought healthy food, healthy produce, and so she followed the diet, followed the exercise, and addressed her medical deficiencies. She had all kinds of health things going on, and we used various natural herbs and nutrients as supplements to optimize every category that we found on the labs. And as we did all those things, this has now been over 6 months. I just talked with him 2 weeks ago. She has had no sundowning syndrome at all for 6 months. At all. Okay, she and I'm almost done here. Okay, she has basically said, he said, you know what? I have my wife back. She's smiling at me. She's talking to me in full sentences, as well as the other family members. She is now reading headlines. She can, now likes to get into the car with me and read signs and says, oh, no, honey, you're supposed to turn here. You know, she has now a location. She's able to understand spatial intelligence. She can actually look at the clock and know what time it is now. She hadn't been able to do that for almost 4 years. Never give up on anybody. Follow a protocol that is comprehensive. And if you use the principles that we have in our health message, the 8 natural remedies and the simple remedies that come with that, God can bless you and bless others through you.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.